Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. According to the press reports, a couple in China did something, well, that is not officially against the law nationally, but apparently in local provinces, it's considered pretty serious. They had more than one child. In fact, they didn't even get that far to actually bring the second child to term. The wife simply got pregnant twice. The first child she brought to term, that is permitted. The second one, when local officials discovered that she was pregnant again, 8 months pregnant, they ordered her to a hospital where there was a forced abortion performed on her and the child. Is this a unique story? Joining us to talk about this, Derek Jones, Communications Director for National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Derek, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Is this a unique story? What do we know about China's one-child policy?
Sadly and tragically, this is one in a string of stories that we have heard for many years coming out of China, a place which, and actually the one-child policy went into effect 30 years ago just this past month, and the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party sent a letter to all of its members setting forth its plan in September of 1980 to embark on this one-child policy, and We've heard stories for years from human rights groups and human watch groups that detail just the way women are brutalized, that families are you know torn apart because of this policy. We've seen just an increase in the number of female gendercide really going on in China as a result of this as well, since male children, which would carry on a family line, are more highly valued than female children, especially in urban parts of China where it is very strictly enforced that women are restricted to having one child. If that pregnancy is a female child, that female child is going to have their life ended prematurely in hopes that the parents can then conceive a male child. And in rural areas, there are places where two children are allowed, but only if the first is female. So it's set up this entire male-centric culture that is completely lopsiding China's gender balance. There are about 120 men to every 100 women in most industrialized nations. That's around 105, 106, 107 to every 100 men. So we're really seeing a culture over the past 30 years that has greatly affected Chinese society and has greater implications worldwide.
So it's not only the cases of forced abortion, like we hear of in this international press story, but it is also attended with this abortion for sex selection.
Yes, absolutely. That's been documented by various human rights groups over the years. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey has written, spoken, and been active in trying to expose all of this. They are oftentimes huge penalties are imposed if a second child is conceived. And certainly if you're an unwed mother who finds her, or unwed woman who finds herself pregnant, then you're either going to have an abortion or pays a huge fine, or both, and then be sterilized when all is said and done. You know, this is the brutality against women as a result of this policy is just astounding.
You mentioned the reaction of human rights organizations. What about here in the U.S.? What do we hear from reproductive rights organizations, pro-choice organizations, when stories like this crop up?
Certainly, we don't hear much. Everyone wrings their hands and says, "Oh, how bad of China to demonize women." But in reality, it's this kind of mentality that the abortion industry is trying to export worldwide through the work of the United Nations, through the work of the World Health Organization. This mentality that abortion will solve all of our social ills and it will help women and it will improve maternal mortality rates and it will improve life in developing nations. And so they kind of take this abortion for everyone mentality, which is what we have here in the United States and much of industrialized Europe, and certainly the forced mentality abortion in China. We're trying to export this now, or they're trying to export this now to nations in Africa and throughout Central and South America, many of which have very protective laws for unborn children on the books, and they're going in and systemically trying to change these. So they're wringing their hands somewhat, trying to save a little face, but in reality, they're working behind the scenes to export this worldwide.
I wonder, in your estimation, do you think culturally the pro-choice groups have won a bit of ground, in spite of these terrible stories coming out of places like China, in that, at least culturally, the shift toward what is considered kind of a decent number of kids for the average American couple to have has been going down, down, down to the point where we're looking at perhaps not even replacement levels of reproduction?
I wouldn't call it a huge victory. I come from an Irish Catholic background and have many friends, and certainly there's no shortage of children in families like ours. I would say that those who tout population control and you know, that we have too many people on the planet, I think it's had less of an impact as far as our birth rates go. There may be other factors leading into that, but I, you know, it, completely unrelated, I think it may have had an effect on the climate change talk, and that's really where the population control advocates have concentrated. Well, we have fewer resources, and we're going after all of our existing resources, and there's going to be nothing left. But in reality, you know, you look at the total number of people in the world and look at the number of square footage, and we end up not having a population problem so much as we've got a distribution problem. You know, certainly there are far more people in the island of Manhattan than there are in upstate New York, or far more people in Chicago than there are in downstate Illinois. So it's just where people are distributed, less than it is that there are too many. And they cling to some of these arcane and draconian views that really, I think, with a large section of the population, don't carry much weight. The section of the population, the majority, that would kind of oppose the idea that we need abortion to stop all of this, and abortion will cure all of our social ills.
We've had 35 years of abortion on demand. I wonder, even though there is no one-child policy, we do not live under a totalitarian state, the unborn in America, are they afforded much more protection if the mother does not want the child than an unborn child in China?
No. There's nothing, with the exception of a handful of laws that make sure women have all of the information about the abortion procedure and the development of an unborn child in, you know, a handful of states, 20, 30 states, there really are no protections for unborn children. And that's something that we've been fighting for and working for both at the state and federal level for the past four decades. This fight really began before 73 in the states, and National Right to Life as an organization has been working to stop the advances dating back to Colorado in 1968. But we don't have legal protection for unborn children. We have a handful of laws that seek to make abortion a little more difficult to obtain, and certainly try and empower women with information about the development of an unborn child. There are laws being passed in the states that allow that the woman can see an ultrasound of her unborn child, a real-time ultrasound, before having the abortion procedure. And it's based on the mindset that when women are given all the information and certainly have a chance to see a picture, they're going to be more inclined to choose life and look for alternatives to having the abortion, whether it's adoption placement or social services that through the crisis pregnancy centers that can help her bring her child to term and give her child life. And we need to continue our efforts and redouble our efforts to pass more laws like that as we work for a day when Roe is ultimately overturned.
Finally then, Derek, the press reports that, at least according to China's own press, some 13 million abortions are performed in that country every year. And as far as we can tell, has their one-child policy, forced abortion in one form or another, solved any of the problems it was intended to solve?
Nope. There are still plenty of people in China. There's certainly no shortage. Of course, the idea behind the one-child policy was to limit the population numbers and provide, you know, the communist resources throughout to everybody in equal number, and then the fewer people we have, the more resources. But we certainly haven't seen that. China's still the largest country in the world. I would wager that some of the violence issues in the country are the same, if not higher, than before the one-child policy. You know, Roe v. Wade was touted. We'll see a decline in child abuse and domestic abuse, and really those numbers have stayed pretty stable in the United States under Roe. So I would imagine that the same thing applies to China. It really hasn't solved anything. In fact, it's made things far worse. You know, suicide rates, one of the facts that came out around the 30th anniversary of the one-child policy is that suicide rates among women were much higher in China for women. I believe it was three times higher female suicides to male suicides.
About 10 seconds here.
Women, over 500 women a day take their lives in China, and their lives aren't any better.
Derek Jones, Communications Director for National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Derek, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will talk about Elton John and his statements on sex education. We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.